Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. By the way, Tim Weiland just texted me the road to Shambhala backed up. There's an accident apparently in the right lane.
Really?
On the road to Shambhala. So be careful if you're headed there this afternoon.
Apparently it's raining there too.
Yeah, it is. That's why.
Huh.
This portion of the show brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the U.S., the original $189 window company, online at windowworldst.louis.com. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geis are here in the studio with me, and now so is Colin Jeffrey, our news director, who has shifted to his alter ego as Showbiz Boy. Even has an email address, showbizboy550 at gmail.com. If you have questions about showbiz, Showbiz Boy can answer them.
There you go.
And he's here now to join me to do movie reviews and other showbiz stuff. There are three movies opening this weekend. Actually, four, right? Because there's that animated movie. And we're going to review two of them. And I'm going to start, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
With War Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
War Dogs is a movie that stars Jonah Hill. And before I tell you what the movie's about, let me just say there are two different Jonah Hills. It's the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one guy who did Superbad and 21 Jump Street and silly movies like that.
I've seen trailers for this.
Well, let me talk about the other guy first.
Okay.
The other Jonah Hill is the one who got an Oscar nomination for Moneyball and for The Wolf of Wall Street. And that's more of the guy that you get in this. What were you going to say?
Oh, I can't tell if it's a comedy or drama.
It's another classic case of the commercials and the trailer not telling you what the movie's really about, because it makes it seem like it's a wacky war comedy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not. War Dogs is a true story of two guys named Ephraim Divaroli and David Pakus who were in their 20s back in 2005, and they're played by Jonah Hill, and Miles Teller is his co-star. And while they were in their mid to late 20s, these two guys, Ephraim and David, exploited a government loophole allowing small businesses to bid on U.S. military contracts online. This is because after we went into war with Afghanistan and then Iraq, the whole no-bid thing with Dick Burton's Halliburton and their subsidiaries caused a lot of controversy. And so the government said, okay, well, we're going to open it all up to bids, and we're going to let small businesses especially bid and allow them to become military contractors. So it won't be Lockheed Martin and Boeing and whoever makes the guns and the ammunition and that sort of stuff. We'll allow anybody who wants to bid on this, and we'll go with the lowest bidder. And so it was the character that Jonah Hill plays, Ephraim Divaroli, who discovered this, and then he brought in his junior high school buddy, played by Miles Teller, David Pakus, and the two of them started going through these websites to look at these government contracts, and they figured, well, the big contractors are going to go for the biggest possible deals, the million or billion dollar deals. We'll go after the smaller ones. It'll be hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they do that. They do that by weaseling their way into deals with foreign arms merchants, sometimes not exactly legal, but also not exactly illegal. And they do that, and so they get a reputation going, and eventually they work that reputation up to the point where they get a $300 million deal from the Pentagon to arm the Afghanistan army and police force. And it's a true story. Now, it's not completely everything that's in the movie is not the truth about what happened. They've dramatized it and made it work as a nice entertainment vehicle. But these two guys made millions by bidding on these small-scale contracts and then filling them, in some cases, with outdated weapons that they got from, places in Asia or Europe or Eastern Europe or wherever. They would buy stuff on the Internet, and they thought they could do this all just sitting in front of their computers in their offices, laughing about it, becoming successful, getting other guys to come join their firm. They had this fantastic office in Miami. At times, it becomes, you could subtitle this movie, The Wolf of War Street, because like The Wolf of Wall Street, it's about young guys getting successful and making a lot of money early on, and then pretty soon there's cocaine involved, and there are hookers involved, and they're living this incredibly lavish lifestyle. But they never thought they'd have to go anywhere besides their offices. And a couple of times in this movie, they actually have to go to Iraq or go to Afghanistan or go to places because the deals that they've made aren't 100% legit. And so they've got to find workarounds for it. It's a very amazing story, and it's even more amazing because it's true. And here's the most amazing part of it. They made it into a good movie.
Really?
This was directed by Todd Phillips, the guy who did the three Hangover movies. The first of which I thought was good. The second one was not so good. The third one I didn't see. But those are just wacky, over-the-top comedies. In this one, he pulls back on that and gets the drama right. And it's very, very interesting and very, very entertaining. I will tell you that, you know, when movies are first being cast, you don't always end up with people like this. The original two stars of this, and I would not have gone to see it if these two guys were in it, Jesse Eisenberg and Shia LaBeouf. Those are two names that immediately say, bad movie.
Yeah.
But they're not in it, and Jonah Hill and Miles Teller both do a very good job. Miles Teller's wife in this movie is played by a Cuban-American actress named Ana de Armas, who, do you remember a movie, the guys from Airplane and The Naked Gun, they made a movie with Charlie Sheen in the 80s or 90s called Hot Shots, yeah, and then they did a sequel to Hot Shots Part 2. And Charlie Sheen's female co-star in that was this very attractive Latina actress by the name of Valeria Galena. Remember her? There's a scene where they're kind of playing around in the bedroom, and he's tickling her stomach with an ice cube, and then he's frying an egg on her stomach and flipping it over with a spatula. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was some very funny stuff in those movies, which I'd like to go back and watch again sometime. This woman, Ana de Armas, is Valerie Galena 2.0.
Okay.
She has the same look, the same kind of accent, the same role in the movie that Valeria Galena did back in the 80s or 90s, whenever that movie was made. I was very impressed with this. I will also tell you, Bradley Cooper is very good friends with Todd Phillips, the guy who made the Hangover movies, and so as a favor to him, he has a small role in this, almost an uncredited role, and I won't spoil that for you, but he's very good in that role as well. This is all based on a Rolling Stone story by a guy by the name of Guy Lawson that was published in 2011, which laid out the facts of these two guys, Ephraim Divaroli and David Pacuz, and how they became arms dealers while they were in their 20s.
That's crazy.
With no experience in this whatsoever, they just found a business to exploit, and they did it very well until things went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to tell you what goes wrong, because that would ruin the movie for you, and I don't want to spoil it. I recommend you see this. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. War Dogs opens this weekend. I don't think it's going to be a huge, huge box office hit, but it only cost them $45 million to make. And so what does it have to pull in this weekend, Colin? $15 million to be considered a success?
Yeah, and I think it'll probably do, yeah, between 15 and 20.
Yeah.
It's going to be a down week because there's nothing huge out. But, yeah, it's going to be the biggest of the new movies this week.
It's on all the, you know, it's in all the major theaters and thousands of screens across the country. So War Dogs, I liked it a lot. Don't be turned off by the trailer for it or the commercial for it, which makes it seem like something that it actually is not.
Yeah, it seems like it's a comedy.
Yeah.
Because when I looked at it, and then it says the person that did Hangover,
mm-hmm.
and then you see them, and the parts that you see are kind of funny.
Yeah. So there are funny parts in the movie. I don't want to tell you it's an out-and-out drama about these two guys that gets really, really serious.
Yeah.
It's a dramatic movie, but it has a lot of comedy built into it. And the comedy comes from the situations these guys find themselves in.
Yeah.
So War Dogs, 8 out of 10.
That sounds pretty good.
Another movie that's opening this weekend is called Hell or High Water, which is a Western, right?
Yes. This is a delayed release to St. Louis. It's been out in the major, major markets for a week already, but it's now coming to St. Louis. This stars Ben Foster, Chris Pine, and Jeff Bridges. Ben Foster, you probably don't know his name, but if you saw him, you would immediately know him. He's a younger guy that plays a creepy person in every movie.
Okay.
He's always sort of the creepy bad guy. He was in 310 to Yuma, Lone Survivor. If you saw the Warcraft movie, he was sort of the bad guy in that. If you saw a Bruce Willis movie from back in the day called Hostage, he was the really bad guy from that.
Okay.
You recognize him. This is sort of a modern day Western. It takes place in West Texas and centers around Chris Pine and Ben Foster, who are brothers. And it opens up with the two of them robbing a bank. And that's really what it is about. These two brothers are robbing a bank because Texas Midlands Bank came along and sold their mother a reverse mortgage. She got sick, couldn't make the payments, and so they foreclosed on her property. And they've given him a certain amount of time to pay it off. But in the meantime, they brought on Exxon to come see if there's oil on her land. Turns out there's oil on their land. So he wants to get it back. Mm-hmm. Chris Pine especially wants to get it back. Ben Foster's had previous legal problems, recently out of jail. And so he's turned to his... Chris Pine is the brains, and he's turned to his criminally savvy. And I say that he knows how to be a criminal, just not a very good criminal.
Okay. Ideas, yes. Execution, no.
Exactly. Tommy Lee Jones plays the sort of folksy Texas Ranger, and he is played his partner is Gil Birmingham. Again, a name you don't know, but you'll likely recognize him.
Okay.
He's half Native American, half Mexican in this movie. That's mm-hmm. how they portray him. And their relationship is one of Jeff Bridges is close to retiring, and Alberto, as is the other character's name, is going to take over for him, I guess, is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jeff Bridges is really racist, but in a fun kind of folksy West Texas way, and it's meant to be funny. The first chunk of this movie is funny. And I'm going to say, really, the first about two-thirds to three-quarters. It's funny because you've got brothers who are trying to figure out how to be criminals, sort of, and you're rooting for them because you come to discover their motives are sort of pure and good.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, you're kind of rooting for the pair of Texas Rangers to get them because, again, they're good guys. There's no one bad necessarily.
So Chris Pine and Ben Foster are robbing banks so they could have the money to buy back the ranch that's been foreclosed on
by the dead mother.
Because Exxon has found oil there.
Yes.
And while they're robbing banks, these two Texas Rangers
are trying to track them down.
Okay.
That's the premise of the movie.
Okay.
I'm not going to talk a whole lot about what happens after this. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to talk about a whole lot about what happens during this because it's a wet. So there are these open vistas that you see, mm-hmm. even though it's modern day.
Okay. So it takes place like a 21st century movie.
Oh yeah. They have smartphones. Like,
okay.
they have smartphones. It takes place pretty much right now.
Okay.
But it doesn't feel like it because it's West Texas and these are farming areas or, you know, blue collar communities that they're going to.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very good movie, a very good movie. And right now, it's probably my favorite movie of the year.
Really?
I will just say that.
Now, I got to ask you this about Jeff Bridges. He played a Texas Ranger in the remake of True Grit.
Yes.
About 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
John Wayne played the original with Glenn Campbell as his sidekick and Kim mm-hmm. Darby as a little girl. And then Jeff Bridges played the John Wayne part in the remake and essentially mumbled his way through the entire movie. It was like he had decided, I'm not just going to have a little bit of chaw of tobacco. I'm going to put the whole pouch in my mouth.
Yes.
And the whole movie's going to come. What did he say? I don't know. Yeah. I couldn't understand.
He needed the subtitles on.
Correct. You needed subtitles for an English-speaking actor, yeah. Jeff Bridges, on
And even
screen.
Then it was just... Mur. That's, they just spelled it out.
You know what it is? It had, in parentheses, mumbles. And then after that, he made two or three other movies, which were... He decided that that's his new character. It doesn't matter what character he's playing. He's always going to be mumbly Jeff Bridges. Mm-hmm. So I've got to ask you, in this movie, can you understand Jeff Bridges as a Texas Ranger, or does he mumble his way through it?
You can understand him perfectly, and he's going to get an Academy Award nomination, I think, for this.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Chris Pine, who I was very worried about. This is Captain Kirk from the new Star Trek movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's who Chris Pine is, if you can't... Or the Jack Ryan from Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit. He's a pretty boy, an action star. I really liked him in this. Pulls it off very well. Ben Foster is always good. You put something in his strike zone, he's going to knock it out. He does that very well,
mm-hmm.
and he nails this role. There's not a weak part to this movie, really. I mean, it's good. The pacing is nice. There's an abrupt change. I said it's funny for about two-thirds to three-quarters of the movie, and then it's not funny. I'm going to say this, and it's not spoiling anything, so I'm not going to tell you about the ending, other than right now there are two types of endings in movies that we see. There's an ending where everything is tied up in a neat bow, and you know exactly how it went. Mm-hmm. There's the text at the end to say, and they all lived happily ever after.
Yeah.
Or there's a movie that's like, expect a sequel in 2 years. Those are the only cliffhanger. Expect us.
Right.
This movie tells the story it's going to tell, and it ends.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm going to say. I really like the way it ended. But that's going to be off-putting for a lot of people because they're not used to that. This has a very sort of art house feel. And as I was watching it about 30 minutes in, I'm like, you know what this feels a lot like is No Country for Old Men. And then I realized that's not fair. You can't take what is arguably the best movie in the last 10 years and compare it to this. That's just not a fair comparison to make, even though they're both sort of like modernish Western.
Is Hell or High Water only going to show in like Plaza Frontenac and Tivoli kind of theaters?
It might show in a few more than that. I think it's still limited release, so it's not going to be on a ton of screens. You may have to search to find it. Go do it, though. You're going to like this movie, and you don't have to be a fan of Westerns. I think it helps because they do the modern Western thing where they show there's not a lot of words at times, and they're saying very profound, neat things in it. They're cowboys. They're modern-day cowboys and bandits. The difficulty is you're kind of pulling for everyone.
Okay.
But, it's a good movie, though, and well-acted, simply told story. And he didn't try and get confused. He's not like, oh, I'm going to make this movie and do this. So many movies nowadays, you meet characters along the way, and you rely on those sort of side characters to be great. They're like a memorable character. This is about four people. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else is not focused on, and I like that.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 9. This is my favorite movie of the year so far.
Wow. All right, now I got to ask you, a movie of this quality, why is it not showing on more screens? Why is it going to be hard for people to find a movie like this?
Because it will make people uncomfortable, not because it's an uncomfortable subject matter necessarily, but because it requires you to kind of go along, not quite certain where this is going to go, uncomfortable because you're kind of pulling for everyone, but there's a tension knowing that, can this work out for everyone?
Mm-hmm.
And you're sitting there, and then it feels sort of art house in a way that it's shot, that it feels like an older Western just in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
But all of that aside, it's a very good movie.
Well,
I think if you give it a chance, you're going to like it, but it's tough.
Hell or High Water and War Dogs, two movies we both liked. And here's what I like about these two titles that we've been discussing. They're both original.
Yes. And I was talking about this with a few other people at the screening. One of the most common complaints, I would say both of us here, is Hollywood doesn't do anything original.
Yeah.
We have reboots
and sequels and comic book movies. And
Sausage Party, War Dogs, Hell or High Water, Kubo and the Two Strings.
Mm-hmm.
These are four movies in theaters right now that can go from kids to crude adult humor. They're all original. Go see those movies. Like, go find these movies because these are the movies people will say, oh, I want to see something original. This is it. Like, these movies right now.
Kubo and the Two Strings?
Kubo and the Two Strings.
What's that about?
I only know a little bit about it. I didn't get to review this. It tells the story of a young boy who has an instrument that he essentially can perform magic with, and helped along by people. It's stop motion animation, helped along by other characters to protect his village is what it ends.
Okay.
We've heard the general idea of the story, but it's stop motion animated, the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have appreciation if you haven't seen like Paranorman or Coraline, those are other things that are stop motion animated. Watch these movies and realize that every character, the characters in the background, those are each being moved by hand. It can take them days or weeks to get scenes that are 30 seconds long.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a Tim Burton movie?
I don't know if that was Tim Burton.
Might have been. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Because I like that one, I think.
Yeah.
But Kubo and the Two Strings is opening this
Kubo
weekend.
Kubo and the Two Strings.
And the fourth movie that's opening this weekend, well, it's a remake. It's Ben-Hur.
Yes.
Which was, 50, 60 years ago was the original one of these?
1959, I think.
Charlton Heston was in the original.
Won a whole bunch of Academy Awards.
I thought this was the story of Jenner.
Caitlyn Jenner. I knew you were going to go there. I actually wrote it down. Dan will say Caitlyn Jenner when I say Ben-Hur.
I'm that predictable. Damn.
Is the only reason to make this movie because now with CGI, you can make the chariot race look even cooler?
I think that's how they're trying to lure the typical person in, the just average moviegoer who doesn't know anything about it.
That's all the trailer is.
Yes, but that's not what the movie actually is. This is a movie with that's more about sort of the spiritual, religious message behind the story. And in fact, I read a couple of reviews, spoke to a person who saw it, and they said they actually distort the story of the original movie to sort of fit some of these faith-based messages in there. So
this is made by Mark Burnett. The reality show producer.
Yes.
Shark Tank, Survivor, etc.
Evangelical.
Yes, very evangelical. And his wife, Roma Downey, who was on that Angel show, whatever that was called.
Oh, Touched by an Angel.
Yeah. Thank you. And they've made a few of these, and there's one audience for it, and it's the people who go to church a lot.
That's his wife, Roma Downey?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So the thing is, I've seen that the reviews for this are devastatingly bad.
Yes.
And this was one of those movies where they put a lot of money into it, and it was supposed to be a gigantic summer blockbuster, and there's a good chance this weekend it will come in not even in the top five?
Maybe top, like, maybe number five. That's probably number five. But to give you an idea of how poor that's going to be, it's a $100 million budget with, before you get into everything else, $100 million just to make the movie, 10 to 13 this opening weekend, and then you assume about a 50 to 60% drop. So after two weekends, if it hits 20 million, that'll be
all the church buses will go this weekend, and then next weekend the church buses aren't going to go, and then so that'll pretty much be the end of that movie.
I think it'd be hilarious though if they showed up and it's like, oh, we misplaced your tickets for Ben-Hur, go see Sausage Party.
Oh, mama.
Well, that'll be kids. The kids will enjoy it. It's a nice little animated movie.
Whoops! They'd be dousing themselves in holy water for the rest of the week.
I'll take a break and we'll come back with more of the showbiz stuff here in a moment on the Big 550 KTRS. Soul from the Isley Brothers here on the Big 550 KTRS, the Friday edition of the large morning show in the afternoon. Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geis, Colin Jeffrey talking about movies and showbiz. If you missed the first segment, we've given War Dogs an 8 out of 10 and Hell or High Water a 9 out of 10. Colin called it one of his favorite movies of the year. A couple of things to mention here about television. I'm a big fan of the HBO series The Night Of, which is going to be ending in two Sundays. This Sunday will be episode 7, and then next Sunday will be episode 8. And I'm mentioning it today so that you can remember to set your VCR. Set your DVR.
Set your VCR to 1998.
Go buy a Betamax tape. Put it in your Betamax player.
Yeah. We're in the Wayback Machine all of a sudden. Set your DVR to record longer than the usual 1 hour because the finale is going to be 95 minutes on August 28th. So just set your DVR accordingly to that. Speaking of TV, another TV channel that you never watched is going away. Did anybody know there was a TV channel called Pivot?
No.
Yeah.
You knew that?
I knew it was a channel because I would see it on my list.
That's the only place you ever were exposed to it, right? As something in the guide.
Yeah.
There are so many channels like this. Pivot has been on the air for 3 years. And I remember when it came on, I said on the air, that channel's not going to make it. You know why? Because they announced, we're targeting millennials.
That's what I thought. It was a millennial channel.
Yes. Yeah. My daughter's a millennial. She doesn't have a TV. Most millennials don't watch TV.
No.
Even Ian, who's... Are you technically a millennial in your late 30s?
No. No.
You're a Gen Xer, right?
Thankfully, I'm outside of
I'm in that
designation.
I'm at the very...
See, I don't buy that. I've heard that millennials go all the way up to like 34 or 35. Yeah. I don't...
I'm under that.
I don't buy that. To me, a millennial is 18 to 25. Hey, right
That sounds about right.
Don't take away my right to feel entitled.
You don't. Ian. No, you shouldn't want to be in that group.
What are you considered, Peon?
But he's Gen X.
Probably Gen X, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gen X.
Yeah, and you know what we are?
Old. Yeah.
But that demographic that Pivot was going to target, these are people who consume video online on demand through their father's Netflix accounts.
Yes.
Did that sound too personal? That's okay.
That's why you have to have the two-screen plan.
Yeah, well, as long as she's doing it in Wi-Fi and not using up the data, I don't care. But this even if the entire Pivot channel had been about that Friends scene where Ross is yelling, "Pivot! Pivot!" to Chandler and Rachel as they try to get the couch up the stairs to the apartment, they were not going to get that demographic. It was just a bad business plan. And by the way, the owners of Pivot, here's how badly that channel is doing. They can't even sell it to somebody else. Nobody even wants to buy that channel space, which is the same thing that happened to Al Jazeera America. Mm-hmm. Al Jazeera paid $500 million to Al Gore and his colleagues to take over from Current,
yeah.
And they got that channel and then threw away Current and turned it into Al Jazeera America, and now that's gone, and there's nothing to replace it. So when I heard about this, I started wondering about some of these other networks that are out there that can't possibly be getting any viewers. And if you don't get viewers, you can't get advertisers. I call them the click-by channels. Like you said, you see Pivot in the guide on your cable or satellite system, and that's it. There are several of these that come up. Did you know there's a network called Havoc?
Havoc?
H-A-V-O-C.
Havoc. No.
There's one called Ovation.
Ovation I've seen on there, but I have no idea. Is that like... I have no idea what's
going on. I don't know what it is. There's one called Up. I think that people just went to a random noun generator and said, that's what we're going to call it.
Ovation, you just turn it on and it's a bunch of people clapping. So.
Do I have to stand while I watch it?
Yeah, sometimes.
that's their premium service, standing ovation.
They just simulcast operas from around the...
There's one called Velocity, which I'm guessing is car racing.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I've never seen any of these. I don't think they produce original shows. I wrote about Pivot the other day, and somebody tweeted me that she was glad that Pivot was around so that she could record the entire Friday Night Lights series, which they aired in reruns. All of these channels are just there to air reruns, and I don't know how you make money off it. And then I'm not even talking about the shopping channels or the ones. There are channels on my... I have a U-verse. On my guide, there are channels there that, again, just seem like they're random names, but they turn out to be channels that just show infomercials. There's one called Wow. Wow TV.
Wow.
What's on that? Infomercials. There's one called Get It. There's one called Value. The Value Channel. Have you ever heard anybody say, oh, I was so late last night watching the Value Channel, man. That Dean Martin Roasts infomercial just keeps me up all night long.
Now, I am not ashamed to say I have watched Gem TV, where they sell you stuff. I love watching these
things. But that's one of the shopping channels.
Yeah, but I love watching those every now and then. There was a gun channel where you could actually... I don't know how they swung that.
I know there's Pets TV, there's Cars TV.
I've seen those.
Have you watched
any
of them?
On the guide, no.
No, you see them on the guide. That's it. There's a Time Life channel. When you hear Time Life, don't you think infomercial?
Oh, yeah.
There's an entire channel devoted to Time Life. Who is watching that?
I don't
know. Time Life is... It's just like, oh, this is the 70s CD collection.
Yeah.
20 CDs, and then they play 15 seconds of 80 songs.
They play 15 seconds of the Carol Burnett Show.
Yeah, that's another one.
Conway and
that's another one.
Harvey Korman cracking up.
The one that I've been seeing lately as I flick by, because we all do that. So you just turn the TV on, you just flick through the channel. Mm-hmm. What are you watching? I'm watching TV. I'm just going through here. I'm trying to find something. The one that I see every time now is the Hee Haw package.
Oh, my goodness.
They've taken the old country comedy show with Buck Owens and Roy Clark and Minnie Pearl and
Junior Samples
and all the
BR549.
There you go. That right there was exactly the amount of hee-haw that I get when I come by that channel. Who watches more than 3 seconds of these channels?
I don't know, but have you ever seen those shows lately? I mean, if you watch them now, they don't hold up. Laughing,
they don't.
Hee-haw.
No.
It's like, oh, they're so bad.
They are from a certain time.
Yes.
So, Pivot. Pivot, we hardly knew ye. You're gone. And so is Larry Wilmore, who was on after Trevor Noah and The Daily Show.
Larry Wilmore's a channel, too?
No, he had his half-hour show on Comedy Central, and last night was the last night for it. And, it was the only show in late night that was hosted by an African-American. And so with all the racial stuff of the past year, he was able to give an interesting viewpoint on some of the stories that have come up. But after a while, it just became, okay, you're funny at the desk for 5 or 6 minutes, and then you have a panel
that's atrocious.
Atrocious. and not funny. And they sometimes they'd have a guest on there, like Kathleen Madigan, great St. Louis comedian. She was on there a few times. But the other, quote, contributors took up so much time, you didn't get to see Kathleen Madigan being funny.
And that was my problem with it. The idea of the panel, I felt, was... It was supposed to do one of two things, either just sort of be satirical and laugh at these serious issues, or to provide unique perspectives on these issues.
I think he was trying to do what Bill Maher does. Have three guests on there, and we'll all talk about topics, and everybody will have something interesting or funny to say. And boy, did it not work for Larry Wilmore and his panel.
No, and the other issue I had is he did this segment at the end, keeping it 100.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was you had to answer. He would pose questions, and you had to answer honestly. So if you're curious what keeping it 100 means, that's what it means.
Keeping it 100%
true. Yes.
Yeah.
And he never held them to it. It was like he'd be like, okay, you have this option, A or B. What would they do? And people would be like, oh, I'd try C. And he'd be like, okay, good answer. It's like that's the exact opposite of what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. The Larry Wilmore's nightly show, which is has to be getting dragged down by Trevor Noah and The Daily Show, which is just terrible. They should just have taken that whole hour off. Just cancel them both. But Larry Wilmore's nightly show is now going to be replaced by what was on after it, a show called At Midnight.
Yes.
With Chris Hardwick and three comedians, all of whom think they're 10 times funnier than they actually are.
Yes.
Here's the great thing about that show. It's called At Midnight, which made sense when it was on 11 o'clock Central Time, but it was at least midnight in the East. Now it's going to be on at 10:30 our time and 11:30 in the East. So it's welcome to At Midnight, which it isn't yet.
Yes. I don't understand that. So I guess they're bailing on the idea, and it makes me curious to see what they're going to do with The Daily Show, because I think they chased the most talented people away from The Daily Show.
Well, look who's gotten away and done better work.
Sam B.
Samantha Bee's show, Full Frontal, fantastic,
which is great,
on Monday nights on TBS. John Oliver with his show Last Week Tonight, also fantastic.
Jessica Williams.
Well, what's she going to do now?
She's going to have a Comedy Central show, and I wouldn't be surprised if this At Midnight move is temporary while they allow her to get whatever she's going to do up to speed, and then they'll reshuffle.
Maybe they should learn from the John Oliver and Samantha Bee lessons, which is once a week.
Yes.
When you have a whole week to put together a half hour, you can make it really fantastic as opposed to four mediocre.
I mean, Jon Stewart nearly killed himself putting together The Daily Show for as long as he did, five nights a week.
Yeah.
Like, he talks about it. That's why he had to get out. I think he was going to die if he kept it up much longer.
Let me speak from experience. Doing a show once a week, great, easy. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Thursday, you wake up, go, I've got to remind myself later on to start thinking about what I'm going to do on Friday. Friday, you do the show, done. Saturday, Sunday, it's a weekend.
Yeah.
You got to do a show 5 days a week. What a grind. What kind of a loser would do? All right, anyway.
What?
I have a streaming recommendation for you. Only because I'm the last person in the world who never watched the show when it was on. I'm finally watching The Wire.
Wait, you haven't watched this yet?
See? This is what everybody says when I tell them I'm watching
this. No, I've never watched it either.
You didn't?
No.
That just kind of threw me for a loop there.
I did not watch it when it was on HBO. It was on, what, five or six seasons?
Five seasons. Yes.
I'm 10 episodes into the first season.
Oh, my gosh.
I was totally hooked by the first hour.
Yeah.
It's really good. And, Ian, you may want to put this on your Netflix queue as well. Amazon Prime. That's where I'm watching it. The Wire.
Or I can give you my password, Ian, so you don't have to go.
No, I pay for Netflix.
I'll take your password.
Recently, I paid for Netflix.
The Wire is about cops and a drug gang in inner city Baltimore. And what's amazing about it is, when was The Wire made? 15 years ago?
Yeah, close to it.
Okay. Remember last week there was a report that came out about the bad things that are going on in the Baltimore Police Department?
Yep.
In real life.
Yes.
The real life Baltimore Police Department, after the death of whoever it was who died in the van. I can't remember his name. Freddie Gray. They did an internal report about the Baltimore Police Department, and they found out about all these horrible things these cops were doing, how they were terrible cops, how they treated women poorly, how they treated minorities poorly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything that report said is in the first season of The Wire.
Yes.
There's internal conflict within the cops. The cops don't like this one guy who keeps doing things that they don't like, but they can't get rid of him, but they want to get rid of him. And meanwhile, in the drug gang, you got the same thing going on. Internal conflict there. It's so well done.
I want you to text me after you watch the first episode of the second season.
Okay.
Just want you to shoot me a text.
All right. And the other thing I wanted to mention to you is you had recommended that I watch The Hateful Eight, the Quentin Tarantino movie. And you said, it's not a great movie, but you should watch it because you like Tarantino.
Yes.
A couple of nights ago.
You sat down?
I sat down and I watched The Hateful Eight. You did not tell me it's almost 3 hours
long. Sorry about that.
There is no movie that should be almost 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And because I'm a Tarantino fan, I knew that there was going to be excessive blood and other bodily fluids in this.
Yes.
That didn't bother me. Here's what bothered me. And I realized this after watching a lot of Tarantino movies. And I kind of thought this after Django Unchained. He's really good at writing set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain thing that happens, for instance, Samuel L. Jackson's in this movie, and Kurt Russell, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Walton Goggins, who I loved on Justified, Tim Roth, and Michael Madsen, and a couple of other minor characters are in this. And they're all very good, and he gives each of them a set thing to do, a set mm-hmm. scene to play, interacting with each other. Oh, and Bruce Dern is in it, and he's terrific in the movie. All of those things are wonderful on their own. Just like the scene in Django Unchained where Jamie Foxx and Christoph Waltz go into that bar
mm-hmm.
and then kill the sheriff in that town. I mean, that, all of that stuff is a wonderful set scene. But taken on the whole, it's just too much.
Okay.
With Tarantino, there's such a thing as too much.
Yeah.
And that's that was my review of The Hateful Eight. I'm glad I watched it, but it was just too much
of
pretty much everything. All right, that's our showbiz stuff for this week. Colin's got to go to the newsroom to get us some headlines here at the top of the hour after ABC. And then we'll come back next hour with more of the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon, including the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the news.